Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Star Wars Legends Lounge, the show that celebrates the books from Star Wars Legends. I'm Aaron Motes. On today's episode, the Clone Commandos are spread throughout the galaxy. Delta Squad searches for a missing Kaminoan scientist, but Cal Skarrata and the Nulls hope to beat them to her. Etain tries to hide her pregnancy back on Killura, and Bassani Wenin follows a paper trail of missing credits to the office of the Chancellor. Meanwhile, Omega Squad uncovers a dangerous secret, one that could shake the Grand Army of the Republic to its very core. It's Republic Commando True Colors by Karen Travis. And joining me to continue our journey through the Republic Commando series is Kat. How are you today, Kat?
You know, I'm recovering from this crazy, crazy book, but I'm so happy to be here and so excited to gush about this book and this book series. So let's get into it.
This book was an emotional roller coaster, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I was not ready for, you know, even one of these twists and turns, but they threw like seven of them at us. So.
Well, Kat and I will talk more about the story coming up in a few minutes. But first, let's take some listener questions. Our first email today comes from Marcus. Marcus says, do you think Dooku was truly on the verge of taking Yoda's offer at the end of Dark Rendezvous before Obi-Wan and Anakin showed up? I do, and having had the chance to meet Sean Stewart at Legends Con, I think Yoda truly had a unique opportunity that only he could have achieved. Well, thank you very much for the email, Marcus. I could see it either way. I do think Yoda was very close to reaching Dooku in Dark Rendezvous. However, one thing I think we should keep in mind, Marcus, is that while Dark Rendezvous and the other stories in the Clone Wars Publishing Initiative could introduce some interesting questions, like if Dooku was about to renounce the dark side of the Force, they couldn't do something that would contradict the movies. I would really like to know what Lucasfilm told Stewart he was allowed to write in that book and what he wasn't.
Our second email comes from Harry in Australia, who has three questions. Harry's first question is, if you had a lightsaber, what color would it be? And are there any notable design features that you'd add?
I've been pretty consistent. Mine would be green if it was my first choice. If it was my second choice, it'd be yellow. And I don't really think there'd be any great design features. I think just the regular, normal, single-bladed lightsaber would be for me.
Yeah, I definitely go with green as well. Green is my favorite color, but I really also like Ahsoka's white saber, so that would definitely be my second choice. I don't think I'd put anything too special on the hilt. Maybe add in some like vine and leaf designs or something, just kind of have a hearken to nature. But other than that, I don't think there'd be anything too crazy on there. That'd be cool. Question number two. What is your favorite episode of this podcast so far? Harry says his favorites are the New Jedi Order roundtables. He said it was so fun to hear everyone's opinions on the books and discuss them together.
Well, those are my favorite, Harry. The two roundtables that we did for the New Jedi Order, and there was a question and answer episode I did with Thomas and Crystal, the two hosts from the TK331 podcast. I would say those are my favorite because of the discussions that we had. But if I had to pick one for a book that was my favorite, wow, that's a good one. I think it may have been the Star by Star one with K2, where all of what happens in the first half of the New Jedi Order series culminates at that halfway point, and stuff hits the fan. I think that was a great book discussion.
That doesn't have anything to do with K2 being your favorite.
That might.
Yeah, I definitely love those roundtable episodes as well. Anytime us nerds can get together and just gush about this amazing universe, I love it so much. I think also one of my favorite episodes is the last episode of the New Jedi Order with you, Scott, and K2. That was so much fun to hear you guys kind of break down those final moments and figure out what could have happened, what did happen, and what really worked for the series. So, anytime I get to hear, as many nerds talking about our favorite things, it makes me happy.
Considering what is about to take place, I could see this episode being a really good one. And I can definitely see our next episode being a really, really good one.
It's just gonna be a lot of me sobbing. I just know it. It's just gonna be.
Which is great radio. It is great
Great.
podcasting.
Who doesn't love that? Harry's final question is, can parts of the Jedi Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor video games be considered legends? Specifically, the customization of the outfits, lightsabers, and ships?
Sure. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I know that you can give Cal Kestis a whole bunch of different ponchos. I know that you can make his lightsaber different colors. You can design the hilt differently. And I'm guessing, just by Harry's question here, that you can customize the ship that you fly around in. So you consider that legends if you want. I would also just consider it canon until anything specifically says what Cal Kestis wears, flies in, and what exactly his lightsaber looks like. I would say anything you want, legends or canon.
Yeah, I think that the great thing about video games and legends are we haven't seen them on the big screen, so we can kind of pick those parts that we want, and that is a part of the canon until they tell us it's not.
Exactly. Well, thanks again for the emails, Marcus and Harry. Now, listener, if you have a question for the show, like Marcus and Harry did, you can email me at swlegendslounge@gmail.com or send me a tweet at legendslounge1. And if you'd like to get your voice on the show, just record a short message and email it in. Just please record it in MP3 audio format. And coming up at the end of the show, I've got an email from someone who disagrees with some of my opinions about the ending of Timothy Zahn's original Thrawn trilogy. You want to stick around for that. But now it's time for today's book, Republic Commando: True Colors by Karen Travis. Grab yourself a drink. Let's head in to the Star Wars Legends Lounge.
The story begins on Mygeeto. Weyland Vow and Delta Squad break into one of the banking clan's hidden vaults. Vow comes from a wealthy family, but he was cut off from his fortune when he decided to become Mandalorian. The group steals more than 55 million in credits before security arrives. Vow and Delta escape and race out onto the ice of the planet's surface. As they get to their transport, Vow falls through a crack. As security arrives, Delta is forced to flee and leave Vow and the credits trapped under the ice.
Elsewhere, Cal Skarrata and the two Null ARC troopers, Ordo and Mareel, are searching for the missing Kaminoan scientist, Kosai. But when Delta Squad contacts them about Vow, Skarrata and Ordo head to Mygeeto to search for him. They purchase a submersible that's also spaceworthy and dive into the frozen water near the ice that Vow fell through. Eventually, they pick up a very faint heat signature. It's Vow and his pet Strill. After hours of scraping away at the ice, they find Vow frozen but alive. When they thaw him out, Vow offers Skarrata almost all of the riches he stole to help with the search for Kosai and to offer his clone commandos when the war is over.
Meanwhile, on Quilara, Etain tries to uphold the Jedi promise to the Galarans by evacuating the planet's human settlers. But she has a big problem. Most of the farmers don't want to leave. General Zay tells Etain that if the farmers won't leave by their own volition, she will remove them by force. Etain's troops, led by Commander Levitt, were able to remove most of the humans from the capital, but a few of the farmers formed a resistance just outside of town. Etain and the troopers have tried several times to settle peacefully, but ultimately must resort to forcibly removing the rebel farmers. During the battle, Levitt sees Etain bleeding. She looks down at the red snow and fears the worst. She's miscarrying the baby.
Omega Squad is sent to the separatist planet Gaftakar to help train a group of native reptilian people to overthrow the government. They meet another one of the Null Arcs, Aden, who tells Omega about an Ark trooper who's gone missing in action. Alpha Ark Commander Sull had been helping Aden train the reptilian guerrillas when Sull just disappeared one day. Sull is presumed dead, but Aden believes he's still alive. He thinks the Alpha Ark went AWOL and left the Grand Army of the Republic, but he's uncertain of the reason why.
General Zay receives new orders from Chancellor Palpatine. Find Kosai alive and take her into custody. Zay assigns the manhunt to General Barden Jusek and Delta Squad. When Skirata contacts Delta Squad to tell them he and Ordo rescued Vow, the commandos tell Skirata about their assignment. Now, the race is on, with Skirata, Vow, Ordo, and Mareel having about a week's head start. They follow several rumors before Mareel uncovers a lead sending the group to the tropical planet Daruma. They find a Twi'lek transport pilot who tells them about deliveries he makes to an empty part of the ocean just offshore. But before they can investigate, Skirata receives a call from Etain, who tells him about her complications with the baby. Skirata sends Ordo off to retrieve the Jedi while he, Vow, and Mareel prepare to dive in the submersible and continue their pursuit of the Kaminoan scientists.
On Gaftakar, Aden sends Darman and Etain into the capital city undercover to do some reconnaissance. While searching for weak points, they spot a very familiar face wearing civilian clothes. It's Sull, the missing ARC trooper. Darman and Etain follow him back to his apartment and subdue him. They drag Sull out of town and back to Aden's base. When they interrogate Sull, he says that he can no longer continue fighting in a war when the Chancellor seems to only want to prolong the fighting. Niner and Darman want Sull brought up on desertion charges, but Aden shocks them by telling Sull to leave Gaftakar and reports the ARC trooper killed in action.
On Daruma, Skirata, Mareel, and Vow use the submersible to dive beneath the waves and find an underwater cave system. And at the entrance of the caves, they find a dead human body tied down with some rocks, tied down with a distinctive Mandalorian knot. When Skirata and Mareel enter the caves, they find an entire laboratory very similar to the stark white halls of Kamino. They start to search for Kosai, but are confronted by three Mandalorians, her bodyguards. It's a quick battle, ending with Skirata and Mareel killing the bodyguards, taking Kosai into custody, and blowing up the underwater laboratory.
Darman sneaks back into Sol's apartment to retrieve his armor and cover up any evidence that the ARC trooper is still alive. Just as he's about to leave, Darman hears a creak out in the hallway. He hides as the apartment door slowly opens. Two people tiptoe in, weapons drawn, clearly looking for Sull. Darman waits until the two pass him. Then he leaps out, surprises the gunman, and kills them. Darman looks in horror at the two men, both of them with his face. They're covert ops troopers under command of General Zay, and they were here to assassinate Sull.
Etain recovers on Quilara, and she and Ordo travel to Daruma, just as Skirata, Mareel, and Vow surface with Kosai. Skirata wants the Kaminoan to stop the advanced aging process in the clones, but Kosai doesn't seem interested. even when threatened. However, when she learns about Etain's pregnancy, Kosei agrees to help the clones if she can study Etain's baby. At first, Etain refuses, but eventually, she offers Kosei some tissue from her umbilical cord after her son is born. The thought of studying the cells of Force User is too tempting for Kosei, and she agrees to help. Skirata takes the entire group to a secret compound he's building on Mandalore to set up a lab for Kosei and to hide Etain until she gives birth.
Auden and Omega Squad lead the reptilian assault on Gaff Dakar's capital city. During the attack, Darman and Phi head to a comm center to try and shut down the planet's communications. As they enter the building, they set off a trap, and the explosion blows both of them down a stairwell. Darman recovers first and frantically searches for Phi. He finds his brother in a pile of rubble and digs him out. Darman and Phi stagger out of the building and into the street, when Phi starts to sway. He passes out, and when Darman tries to wake him up, Phi is unresponsive. Darman, Niner, and Etain call for a pickup and transport Phi to a Republic cruiser to head back to Coruscant.
Phi is pronounced brain dead when he arrives at the Republic medical facility, but Omega Squad refuses to allow the medical droids to euthanize him. They are ordered back to base, but not before they contact Skirata and tell him what's happened. Skirata calls Bessany Winnan and asks her to protect Phi until he can get help. Bessany enters the medical center and barricades herself in Phi's room, brandishing a blaster to hold off the staff and security. Soon, Captain Jollar Obram of the Coruscant Security Force arrives and takes Phi and Bessany into custody. Obram is paying back a favor to Skirata and agrees to hide Phi and Bessany in his home until they can be smuggled off-world.
On Mandalore, Etain gives birth to a healthy baby boy named Venku. But Etain has been off the grid for weeks and needs to check back in with General Zay and the rest of the Jedi Council. She travels to Coruscant with Venku and Skirata to Bessany's apartment. There, they meet with Omega Squad and Bardan. Darman is drawn to Venku, and Skirata tells him the baby is his grandson. Etain watches from the back of the room as Darman says he hopes to be a father someday. But right now, he's not ready.
At Obram's house, Bardan uses the Force to try to heal Phi. After hours of sitting with Phi in meditation, Bardan calls Ordo into the room. Phi has started to respond. He's mumbling and moving a little. After a few more sessions, Skirata believes Phi is well enough to move to the compound on Mandalore. Bessany covers their tracks by listing Phi as killed in action in the GAR database. By the time the group arrives at Mandalore, Phi can speak a little and use a hover chair to move around. Things are starting to look up for Skirata and the clones when all their dreams come crashing down. They find Kosei in her lab, dead, swinging from the ceiling, taking with her any hope of stopping the clones' rapid aging.
Delta Squad arrives on Daruma, continuing their search for Kosei. They learn of a huge underwater explosion a few days before. They dive to investigate and find evidence that the explosion was not a natural event. Clearly, someone did this. In the rubble, Delta Squad finds evidence that Mandalorians were there. They contact Skirata and Val, who reveal everything that's happened. Now the only thing left to do is end the Chancellor's investigation. And to do that, Skirata tells Delta to meet him on Coruscant.
The story ends at Special Ops Headquarters. Delta Squad arrives outside General Zay's office carrying a package. Sev enters the office and presents it to the General, a box containing Kosei's head. Sev tells General Zay that Delta Squad found her remains in the rubble of Daruma. Sev tells Zay he believes the Kaminoans may have been hunting for Kosei when the scientists fled with her research. Unfortunately, all of that information was destroyed when whoever killed Kosai destroyed the lab in Daruma.
Time for a break. When we return, we'll talk more about Republic Commando True Colors. I'm Aaron Motes. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Star Wars Legends Lounge. Thank you for listening to the Star Wars Legends Lounge, where we celebrate the books from Star Wars Legends. But let me take a moment and recommend a book from Star Wars canon. Padawan is the story of young Obi-Wan Kenobi's first solo mission. Determined to win the approval of his master, Qui-Gon Jinn, Obi-Wan tries to help a group of young people on a strange, dangerous planet. Can Obi-Wan save the teens before the planet destroys them? Find out in Padawan by Kirsten White. Welcome back to the Star Wars Legends Lounge, the show that celebrates the books from Star Wars Legends. I'm Aaron Motes, and today, Kat and I are talking about Republic Commando True Colors by Karen Travis, the third book in the Republic Commando series. Kat, how are you doing emotionally?
Not great, my friend. Not great. I've been up, I've been down, I've been dragged all around, and yeah.
What was for you the most emotional part of the story? Because I think you could probably pick out of five or six in this book.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. It's absolutely the moment. Not even that Fi is in the accident when he falls to the ground whenever Darman realizes something is very wrong. It's towards the end of the book where Darman thinks to himself it would have been better if Fi had died. And that was the part that really broke my heart, and I just have not recovered yet from it. But Fi being, you know, we talked about last time, he's comic relief, but he's also deeply depressed on the inside. And now to add this on top, it just breaks my heart so much for him and the rest of Omega Squad.
And the reason Darman says that is because living inside a body that I wouldn't say was betraying him, but as far as the other clones are concerned, Fi is now trapped inside of a body that can't do what it was designed to do.
Right, exactly. And on top of that, already rapidly aging.
Exactly. And on one level, Darman thinks that's a fate worse than death.
Right. And just being inside of his head whenever he mourns the loss of his friend while he's still holding his hand and trying to talk him through, you know, his recovery and everything is just so, so real. And I think it's written so well because you can feel that, you know, worry and guilt and all of that in Darman's words.
For me, it also involves Darman, but it is the scene where Darman meets his son and doesn't realize it's his son, and how every other person in the room, except for Niner and a teen, but you had Cal Scarada there, Bessany Wenin, they had told her who it was, Barden was there, Barden knew who the parents were, and then, of course, Etain herself sort of standing in the back and watching all of this. And even Darman says, when he keeps glancing over at Etain, that she looked sad as she was watching Darman hold little baby Venku. And he hands Venku back to Skarada and says that he's not ready to be a father. And then the conversation that he and Etain have out on the balcony, where Darman keeps seeing how sad Etain is, but he misreads why she is so sad. That scene may have been the most emotionally charged for me in the story.
Yeah, absolutely. They're, I mean, you, there's no denying their connection, but the fact that she has to hide such a big part of this connection from him, and he can only read what he can with the information that he has, and to just see this disparity of their communication at such early an age for their relationship, because it's not like they've been together for years. It's been months. So, like, just to add that on top of, you know, Darman also doesn't necessarily have years and years for them to get past this. So there's always that ticking time clock that's going on in the background for all of these clones.
And the other part about it is, when he first walks in the room, it says that Darman is drawn to the baby. There is some sort of connection there. It's either that point, or there was the point later when they go back to Mandalore and they brought Fi with them, and Fi sees the baby and hears them talking about it, and he's the first member of Omega Squad who understands who the baby's father is, but he can't physically say Darman's name. He keeps saying, "Da, da, da." And Etain looks at Fi and sort of gives him a knowing nod that, yes, this is Darman's.
They really held none of the punches in these last, like, 150 pages. Like, I'm sorry, would you like your heart to be, you know, beating out of your chest or just crushed in a hand? Because they do it all.
And even when it finally looks like things are going their way, Kosai takes her own life. And she wants it known that she was the most advanced cloning scientist out there. So she can't bring herself to destroy the research. But she does not want to help Cal Skirata, and she does not want to stop the clones from aging.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest shocks for me. Definitely, like, emotionally wise, I was like, cool, good riddance. But also, why would she want to do that? Because you'd think she'd want to be the person to say, I was the one who stopped the who accelerated the clones aging in the first place. And then also, I am prideful enough to know that I'm the only one who can stop it. And so, to me, it seems like her pride would have been the thing to keep her going no matter what. And so to see that she took her own life like that, because also, you know, at the end of the day, that's what we want for these clones, right? We want them to live normal lives, if not longer. So taking away that solution for us and for both Omega, Delta Squad, Skirata, all of them, feels like such a huge loss right at the tail end of, here's a new baby. Also, we're going to take this. Like, and she also seems so interested in studying the baby, too. So,
and she did study the cells for about a week. And then, I guess, decided, I've learned what I want to learn. I think the reason she took her own life is, in most of the scenes with Kosai, she was speaking down to everyone as though they were lesser beings than the Kaminoans, specifically lesser than her. And I think she finally just had enough of, in her mind, working for lesser beings.
You know, I really love the structuring of this book for a lot of reasons. But I also love those little paragraphs or like the little tidbits that we get that are taken from like this Senate meeting here or this message between General Zay and Yoda or Windu or whatever.
At the very beginning of every chapter. Yes.
Correct. Yeah. And one of those messages was Kosai talking about how the Kaminoans came to be such great geneticists. And it was basically they culled, this huge storm took out a ton of their race. And then they culled another third or half of the race to really get the tip top of the tier of the Kaminoans that had survived to that day. And it sounds brutal, and the way that she writes that letter is absolutely a we are superior because we went through this hardship, because we went through a culling, and everybody else is just, by the wayside.
It's a little bit different than some of the Kaminoans we've seen lately in canon, specifically Nala Se, in the fact that she actually seems to have some connection to Omega, the little clone on the Bad Batch. Now, we don't know exactly if that's just because of any research they're doing on Omega, or if she actually has some affinity to the girl. But she at least is not shown as heartless as the Kaminoans in these stories that we're reading right now.
Absolutely, yeah. And I definitely don't think that all Kaminoans would be this way, but it's those top scientists that got to where they were for a reason, and the example of Kosai is absolutely one of the worst that we see. So it's hard to, the beauty about these books is that, of course, we want her to go because she's a terrible, awful person. But we want her to stay because we need that research for these clones. And so, to present, it's hard in this book to be presented with hardship after hardship after hardship, a little bit of hope, a little bit of hope, and crushed. So,
So yes,
hence the roller coaster.
the majority of the emotional turns in this story are down, but there are some positives in this story. It appears that Val has joined Team Skarrata in trying to come up with an exit plan for at least some of the clones, and that includes stealing his entire family fortune. I think it was basically just to do it, to sort of stick it to his father, because he doesn't actually want the money. Then he just gives the money to Cal Skarrata to help fund this exit plan.
Yeah, that was such a great moment, especially because Skarrata, when rescuing him, is like, why am I rescuing him? We have tried to kill each other on several occasions. So why am I trying to save him? But I know that Delta Squad will be pretty upset if he's gone just because they were the ones that left him in the first place. And then, the first thing Val does when he wakes up is, you have this entire fortune for my boys, for our boys.
It wasn't like he was paying Skarrata. This wasn't, okay, you saved my life. Let me give you the money to show you my thanks for saving me. This was Val's intention all along, was to give Skarrata this money. So, as far as on the ups, that's going to help fund this compound that Skarrata is building on Mandalore. Hopefully, it funds some sort of exit plan for at least his clone commandos and Val's clone commandos as the war hopefully winds down. We still don't know that for a fact, but as it hopefully winds down. Now, we had a spot in the book that could have been terrible when Atayne thought she was miscarrying, but it does end on a positive. We have a brand new little baby, Venku. Atayne and Bardin can already feel that the child is force sensitive. Kosai says there is no issue with the advanced aging of the clones because those genes had to be switched on. And without doing any experimentation on Venku, those genes aren't going to be switched on. So, as far as we know, he's just going to be a normal child. What do you think lies ahead for baby Venku?
Well, his name Venku in Mandalorian means a positive future. So I have all my fingers and toes crossed that this kiddo gets a positive future, and maybe he brings about a positive future for the clones. They might be able to figure out in his DNA what that gene is that they might have to switch on or off. And maybe that's the key to helping the rest of the clones, or at least these clone commandos, something of that nature. I don't know. I'm so uncertain because Order 66 is next, and I'm just really hoping that we see, this kid be able to have that normal life, him be able to give a glimpse of that normal life to Darman and the rest of Omega Squad and Delta Squad. I definitely think he's going to bring in some positivity. I mean, Etain says that she's had visions that this child is going to be able to bring about, a lot of good things in his life. So we'll kind of see how that transpires.
Do you think Venku is going to know his parents? I mean, I think Cal Skirata will tell him eventually who his parents are, but do you think he'll ever know them?
Again, we have Order 66 coming up next, so
So watch out, Etain.
yeah, watch out, just everybody. I'm already too attached to all of these characters to not be devastated by whatever comes next. But I think, like you said, Skirata is definitely gonna tell the kid about him, about his parents, and about his origins and everything. Whether or not they get to know him, and if Etain just gets these positive images of this is what he's going to be doing with his life, that might be where that story ends. I don't know.
It does seem like he's going to be raised Mandalorian.
Yeah, which I think is a really positive spin, and especially, like, I really hope that Jusek is also there to be able to help raise or be able to assist in some way in that process, because he was raised Jedi and is absolutely taking a turn for Mandalorian. Not even necessarily Mandalorian, but definitely more so on Skirata and the clone side, which happens to be Mandalorian. And kind of making that switch, so he's kind of getting the best of both educations in that sense.
So that is one thing that we did not touch upon in the book summary in the first half of the show. One big thing that happens in this story is Barden Jusek walks away from the Jedi Order. He sees that the Jedi are not practicing what they preach. He sees that by, first off, using a slave army, and secondly, tying themselves so closely to the Chancellor and the Senate of the Republic that they've lost their way. And Jusek says, enough's enough. I have to leave. I was like clapping when that happened
Yes.
in the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Because this is the entire time we are in Etain's head. She is, giving voice to the questions that I personally have when thinking about the Jedi being participants and leaders within this army. And so Jusek to then take that a step further and say, no, we cannot abide by this. This is not what you taught everybody else. This is not what you are literally saying to the entire galaxy, that you are the Jedi Order, that you fight for all life, X, Y, and Z, but you're literally throwing it away in droves. And just because, oh, well, the politicians say we have to. You're the Jedi Order. You have nothing to do with that. You can say no at any and all time. And he finally has enough of it.
And if you remember back to the first book in the series, Hard Contact, Etain the Padawan has these same exact thoughts. It seems like Etain is close to leaving the Jedi Order, but the thing that keeps Etain around, she says that she can't live with herself if she thought she was deserting her troops. the clones. Barden asks her to leave with him. And it's the same thing. She's like, no, I cannot leave my men. I'm loyal to my men. So she decides to stay.
Which I think is exactly what happens to Obi-Wan and Anakin. Several times whenever we're watching the Clone Wars series, they voice very similar sentiments, especially Anakin and even Ahsoka. They all talk about how they have attachment to these clones and they cannot leave their men, so they have to be able to lead them in order to save as many of their lives. Versus Jusek is saying, we can save more of their lives if we all collectively say no to this entire plan. And then, you know, especially having that information from Bessany about the allocation of funds, that seems a little sketch. And then Skirata also saying, this plan for war is not good. It's just continuing the war. Nobody is winning. Nobody is changing sides. It's not a war. It's a stalemate with everybody in the dark about it. Like, Jusek is saying, at this point, we have facts that are saying this war needs to stop immediately, and we, as the Jedi, have to be the ones to stop it.
And they just aren't.
No, they're not, because they're like, well, at this point, somebody is telling me to do it, because we have now made ourselves a branch of the military. And as long as it's somebody else's fault, we can say that somebody else made the decision.
So last thing to talk about, one of the most important things that happens in the story is Omega Squad discovers that the clones can't leave the service. Sull, the ARC trooper on Gaftakar, tries to go AWOL, and someone in Special Ops sends an assassination squad after him. Fi, when he gets injured, it's basically, well, we would use too many resources trying to heal him. If it's anything more than just a scratch or two, we're just going to let him go. You know, there is no such thing as life support for the clones. And it shakes Darman to his core. We don't get Niner and Ateen's thoughts. I guess we can assume they think similarly to Darman. But we do get inside Darman's head. And he does not understand what is happening.
Right, yeah. Initially, when they run into Sol, they're like, we absolutely need to turn him in as a deserter immediately. You know, we can't have, you know, other brothers thinking that this is the way to go. And so they're kind of in a different boat from the Null ARC troopers, and that the Nulls know that they are working towards a plan to be able to get off on a planet on their own, to have a retirement plan for the rest of them, no matter how long that retirement may be. But Omega Squad and Delta Squad are new to that way of thinking. So at first they're like, yeah, no, deserters have to be punished the same as the rest of them. But in learning that you don't get a choice in leaving, you don't get a choice in becoming a part of this army, and you don't get a choice in leaving, is absolutely world-shattering for them, for sure.
You don't get a choice, and you don't get the opportunity to convalesce if you are injured badly enough. They take the choice for you to live away from you. Remember, on the cruiser heading back to Coruscant, the droid is about to euthanize Fi when somehow, miraculously, he takes a breath. And remember, it shocks the droid. The droid doesn't know what to do. His programming said he needs to be euthanized. But with that breath, now his programming doesn't tell him what to do if the subject is brain dead but still living.
Right, exactly. Again, another gut punch that we didn't need. But But those the clones did. They absolutely needed that gut punch so that they can begin to try and spread this message for however long that works. Until Order 66 totally ruins all of that. I'm listener, I'm worried. I'm scared, I'm worried. I want you to know it.
Well, that's our next book, but we'll talk about that in 2 weeks. As of now, everyone's alive. For the most part, everyone is at least safe for now.
Yeah, I'm hugging them all in my head right now, and I'm holding tight to the last pages of this book, and this will be my last episode, guys. I'll miss you so much. Just kidding.
Well, on that, it's almost time to go. But first, I wanted to have an email from Bryce, who disagrees with my opinion about the end of The Last Command by Timothy Zahn, the final book in the Heir to the Empire trilogy from the early 1990s. I have said I've never been a fan of how Grand Admiral Thrawn is defeated at the end of the story, and how the Empire ended up with Luke's hand from Cloud City. Bryce has a few other opinions. Kat, would you please read Bryce's email?
Absolutely. Bryce says, "Hi Aaron, you mentioned you do not like how the ending played out with Thrawn's demise. While I agree with you that it was weak and seemed rushed, I prefer the idea of Thrawn being killed by the Nogri this way. I don't believe the New Republic could ever tactically defeat Thrawn, and it shows that even as smart as Thrawn is, he cannot see every outcome. As for the scenario around Luke's hand and the lightsaber, I believe it was recovered by Palpatine and stored in Wayland. You mentioned that Jerus Sabaoth recovered it, but I don't see this being correct. It would make sense for the Emperor to recover it and store it, knowing he can make clones in the same storage facility and could clone Luke at any time he wanted in the future. I started reading Legends when I started listening to your podcast 12 months ago. My favorites are the Bane trilogy and Kenobi. I grew up a big Star Wars fan and never really thought about reading the Legends novels due to them not being canon. I've realized as I've grown older that that doesn't really matter as long as you enjoy the journey. I've started going back and re-listening to episodes after reading each Legends novels to compare my thoughts to the story against your own. It's great fun. I'm currently reading I, Jedi, and I'm starting the new Jedi Order after that."
Well, thank you very much for the kind email, Bryce. If you enjoy the ending of The Last Command and the way that Grand Admiral Thrawn is defeated, that's great. It doesn't work for me. It works for other people. As for the part about Luke's hand, maybe I misspoke in the episode. Yes, I know it was the Empire that recovered Luke's hand and put it in Mount Tantus in Wayland. When I said that Sabaoth recovered it, I just meant that he recovered it in the Wayland warehouse. So if I said that incorrectly on the episode, that's my mistake. As for the second part of your email, that's great. I'm glad you're starting to read Legends. I'm glad you're loving the journey. And your thoughts are the same as mine. I like stories in both canon and Legends. It doesn't matter to me if one is canon or Legends. I just like a good story. I think there's great stories on both sides. I think both sides have some stinkers. It doesn't really matter. I hope you enjoy I, Jedi. I hope you enjoy the new Jedi Order. I know the folks that joined me last year to read the new Jedi Order seemed to have fun. Did you have fun, Kat?
The most amount of fun. I hope you love certain episodes over others, but I'm not gonna like name names or anything, but I think they're all pretty great.
Well, you got to do the first one, Vector Prime, that had the first initial shock that everyone who reads those stories, it blows them away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
I
we're
have
not
to
going to say
say
it now in case Bryce has not listened to the episode. We're going to let him read the story first. But it was fun talking to you after that.
Yes, because I was a sweet summer child. I had no idea what was coming. I was not warned. And even when going over it in the podcast, I was still a little dazed. So.
Once again, Bryce, thank you for the email. Now, listener, if you disagree with one of my opinions, let me know. Email me at swlegendslounge@gmail.com or send a tweet at legendslounge1. And of course, send in any questions and various Star Wars character groups. We like to read those at the end of the show. Kat, it's time to wrap up for today. Thank you very much for joining me again.
I enjoyed it so much, and I am so thankful that you asked me to read these books because I love them so much. And although they are full of pain, it's a good pain because it means I'm just falling in love with more and more clones. So I always love talking about these with you.
You said you're having fun. You look like a puddle on the floor, a puddle of emotions.
Definitely a lot of emotions. It's going to take months to recover. But again, I love it. I love the pain. It's fine.
If listeners would like to contact you, Kat, or listen to your podcast, Animated Antics, how can they do that?
I am on Twitter or X or whatever it'll be called next week. My handle is Kat Delancey. That's Kat with a K, ATDELANCY. Or you can find our podcast on Twitter at J and Cat 1 or Instagram Animated Antics. We're kind of on a little bit of a hiatus, but we should have another episode coming out next month. But yeah, Animated Antics, pretty much everywhere you'll find mentions of us. So come check us out.
Coming up with the next episode, Cat, it's the fourth book in the series, Order 66, a Republic Commando novel by Karen Travis. What are your initial thoughts?
I'm going to pretend that I don't know what Order 66 is and that they all get to ride into the sunset in a beautiful wayward vessel, and it's going to be wonderful and beautiful and fantastic. That's it. Those are my thoughts. And that's how it's going to happen.
I think Order 66 is a Renaissance fair. I think that's all it is. You're supposed to put on a Renaissance fair.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like that. Yeah, there's actually 66 different kinds of characters that you can play, and everybody gets to cosplay as another one. It's great. That's it.
Well, listener, you can look forward to listening to that episode coming up in 2 weeks on March 22nd. Thank you so much for listening to us on today's Star Wars Legends Lounge. I'm Aaron Motes. May the Force be with you. And remember, listener, there's always a bit of truth in legends.